You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast.
Coming up on episode 27 of the RedCafe.net podcast, we'll be looking back at the emphatic win over Portsmouth. Green Demon is next up on the Cap Countdown, and Luke Marson from the villablog.co.uk joins us on the line to preview Aston Villa away.
Welcome to the RedCafe.net podcast. You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net, or alternatively, post your opinion on the RedCafe.net forums.
Well, welcome along to episode 27 of the RedCafe.net podcast. I'm Stephen Darwin, and I'm joined by Dan and Dov. Guys, how are we this week?
I'm all right, thanks, Steve. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Been up to anything of any note?
No, not especially. I'm quite a boring soul. Don't do much with myself. No, Dov's the more cultured one of the three, I think. So what have you been doing, Dov?
What have I been doing, Dan? I watched the Chronicles of Narnia, Prince Caspian, and The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, back to back. They're all right. Other than that, I haven't done very much. I'm saving money because I'm gallivanting next week, so.
You are, yeah. Actually, I saw Evictus as well. You know that film about South African rugby team? I thought it was quite good. Yeah. I watched that last night. It was decent. Matt Damon.
Did Matt Damon give a stand-up performance, or was he usual?
He wasn't particularly amazing, but I thought he was okay. I don't think he gets stuck into the rugby that much. I think somebody else does that, but all right, it was fine. It's a good film. I suggest you watch it.
I shall look into it. Steve, have you been up to anything? You're always asking us questions.
haven't, to be honest, Dov. Not been up to a great deal, other than obviously working. But other than that, no. Can't say I've been up to much, but why don't we get cracking on with the show, shall we, and start with Portsmouth, the 5-0 victory. Dan, sort of result that we all expected, wasn't it? Plenty of goals, and it keeps things ticking over quite nicely, doesn't it?
Yeah, the Portsmouth fan from last week was saying it could have been a cricket score or whatever, and I think it was. Could have been a lot better as well. We should have maybe had, you know, without being greedy, we should have had at least 10. But I thought
that's been greedy, Dan. Come on.
It's not. I think we made the point before about goal difference. It would have been a great opportunity to further it even more. But I thought the whole team played well. No one had a bad game. Even the subs that came on looked all right. Had an input. The youth looked sharp. Daff yellow card though, but he did look sharp. Owen, when he came on, did all right. And Gibson as well. So I think all in all, good squad performance. And there was no need to worry on any part really from Portsmouth apart from the odd chance in the first half.
Dov, back to 4-4-2 as well, and Rooney and Berbatov amongst the goals too.
I got my customary text from Dan after Berbatov scored. Missed a sitter though, Dan. Was it that?
He did, yeah, good? Yeah. I couldn't defend that. It was a bad miss. I didn't realise how bad it was as well until I got home and watched it on the highlights. It was pretty poor. But his goal eclipsed it, so it was all right.
It's just one good thing and one bad thing in a game, so he's getting closer to being decent.
See the pass to Valencia? That was exquisite. If Valencia scores that, we'll all be raving about, you know, how good Berbatov is and all this lot. But as it happens, Valencia missed and everyone forgets about it. So
just remember who you're playing. You're playing Portsmouth. Like,
doesn't matter. You still got players that you look. That wouldn't have mattered if it was Chelsea. He'd have done the same thing. He'd have clipped it over him. John Terry wouldn't have been anywhere, would he?
John Terry's a hero. What are you talking about? John Terry's the best defender in the world.
Actually, it's all these revelations led me to watch a YouTube clip of when we won the Champions League in 2008 and when Terry missed that penalty. So
that was a wonderful moment.
Anyway, let's not dwell on John Terry. But I thought Berbatov was he had a decent game, didn't do nothing outstanding, but you know, I thought him and Rooney looked like they linked up quite well again, which is good to see.
Dov Nani, another decent shift from him, wasn't it? And on the left-hand side too. I mean, we were talking last week, weren't we, about how would we get Valencia and Nani in the same side if Nani was only able to perform on his natural side on the right. But he put in a decent shift, didn't he, on the left-hand side?
Yeah, he was very, very much involved in our play. And this is where I get to rave about a player and tell everybody how fantastic Nani is. Nani's fantastic. And he's really, like the last, what is it, 4 or 5 games, he's really shown that. And I think he's got a lot more confidence about himself as well. And he did make a couple of mistakes, but it didn't let it get to him as much as maybe, say, before Christmas it would have done. And it didn't really affect his game as much against Portsmouth as it would have done before. And he seems like a completely different player. And a lot of people have been saying that he could be the catalyst that could take us towards the title. And I mean, if he keeps playing the way he's played, if he can keep this up, then he's definitely going to be a player that every single team that we face is going to fear.
The thing about Nani is the fact that he has been injured or not been playing, you know, for the past, you know, 4 or 5 months. So he'll be sharp and he'll be fit as well, which obviously towards the end of the season could hold us in good stead, really. The interesting thing I noticed about Nani at the weekend, you know, when I was actually at the game, you know, the fact that Evra overlapped him, but Nani actually, he filled in at left back. Now, never used to see that from him. I think someone's had a bit of a word, you know, you've got to be more team orientated and things like that. You know, he filled in at left back. Nothing came down that side, thankfully, but he still had the awareness, you know, and the teamwork to just step in for Evra, you know. Didn't have to rush back. And I thought that was good, because obviously you need that in a team, and it's a bit more responsibility as well that he's taken on his own shoulders without somebody telling him what to do all the time. I think he's definitely most improved player over the last, obviously, you know, 3 or 4 games anyway, and hopefully he can carry it on.
Yeah, echoing that as well. I mean, that's what he was doing against Manchester City in the League Cup as well. Yeah. When he had his head, he was up in front of Raphael. He was really helping him out and covering for him and like speaking to him and making sure Raphael knew what he was doing as well, which is shows he's maturing a lot. He's maturing a lot as a player.
Ferguson said that about him maturing, hasn't he? And I think it, like we said about, you know, about responsibility. I think he knows his role now in the team. He knows what he's got to do. Ferguson also came out and said that the rest of the players love him and they don't know why he doesn't start every game. But you know, Ferguson's the boss, he'll decide when he plays. I think that he's developed into a player that we all thought he could turn out into. You know, obviously he's still got a long season left, and then he'll be going to the World Cup as well. So
give him a couple of years. To be as good as Ronaldo.
He's only 23. You know, still quite young. You know, football fans are very fickle, me included. You know, if someone plays well, I'll say if they play bad, you know, next week it's, you know, the worst player in the world. But
apart from Berbatov, that's the only player you never do that for.
No, I just think that I love the way Berbatov plays. I love his style. I don't care if people say he's lazy. He's got everything you need, really. He needs more goals. That's one thing I will say. He does need to score more goals. But as long as he's playing well, it doesn't really matter who scores the goals. But I just think that for 30 million, like you've said in the past, he should get a few more goals. But you know, he's been playing well, so there's no reason to knock him at the moment.
And without reflecting too much on John Terry, Dan, Rio getting the nod for the England captaincy. Right decision for you? I mean, will that sort of help give him a lift, considering he's had so much trouble this season in terms of injuries and form, or could that be more of a burden to him?
No, I think he'll love it. He seems to be one of them type of players who wants a captaincy. He's always stated his intent to be captain of United, you know, when Neville leaves or when Giggs isn't playing. He's always the one with the armband. And I think it suits him. It brings a little bit more out into his game, more responsibility. And I was saying Ferdinand should have been captain in the first place. It might be, you know, a bit biased because he plays for United, but I think that he is a good leader. He doesn't lead the same way in what John Terry does by, you know, screaming and shouting and pointing and, you know, pulling people around. He's good in his own way.
Do you think he leads by example more, as in like he'll do something and he wants everybody to do it to the same standard and the way he does it?
The thing I like about Rio is the fact that he when he's on the pitch, he always seems to be calm and collected sort of thing. He doesn't seem to rush into anything. He always seems to have time on the ball. You know, he makes space for himself. And he helps out his defenders as well. You know, you'll notice when Van der Sar gets the ball, Ferdinand will always make a bit of room so that he can pass it to one of the wing-backs, or etc. You know, things like that. You know, Terry probably does the same. I don't see him week in, week out. But I just think that Ferdinand, you know, he's a good lad to have. He's your captain, I'd imagine. And players respect him as well, even though obviously he's had problems in the past, but you know, he's proved, you know, that he can change. And until a revelation comes out about Rio Ferdinand and somebody's wife, then I don't mind.
Everybody's watching their wives and girlfriends now. John Terry.
Yeah. Well, there's a chant down at was it the Arsenal game when we were chanting at Ashley Cole to watch his wife, which is quite humorous. I like that.
Well, Dov, back to United matters and Arsenal. Well, they didn't go out and batter Chelsea as Ferguson was hoping. Gary Neville, he's come out and said that he thinks the title race is very much in our hands. And given that we still got to play Chelsea at home, is that something you'd agree with?
Yeah, well, that puts it exactly in our hands. I mean, if basically the teams match each other from now on, and then we play, like when we play Chelsea, if we win, we'll go ahead of them. I just think considering the way we've played all season up until maybe the last month, we're very, very fortunate to be in the position that we're in, because really up until the last month we've been pretty dreadful in most games. And to find ourselves as close as we are to Chelsea, who have been relatively consistent, is great for us. And then we're obviously going through the new year sort of powering on and putting a run together like we always do. I think we're going to really pressurise them, and like you say, we've got the experience of winning leagues and chasing down teams, and they maybe don't have that as much, which obviously could come be an advantage to us.
Dan, I want to get your sort of thoughts on Anderson. We talked about it in the past that can't really see how he's going to get in at the moment, considering how well Carrick, Fletcher and Scholes are playing. But he's come out and said that he's going to fight for his place, and he's going to have a good go at it. And he'd probably do well to take a leaf out of Nani's book in that respect, wouldn't he? Considering Nani had been pretty much written off, comes out of nowhere, puts in a few good performances, and he's back in the side again.
Yeah, I've not heard that from Anderson, to be honest with you, but I trust in what you say. But I mean, it's great news that he does need to knuckle down a little bit. Maybe he got ahead of himself, thinking he was in the squad every other week, you know, and he just had to turn up, because his performances, they've not been brilliant, but you can definitely see the potential there. And fans are alright when they can see that something good might come out of it, you know. He's still a good player. I would have him in the squads just for, you know, give him that bit of experience. But, I mean, there's no reason why we should sell him at the moment. He's got to prove himself, like you say, like Nani has done.
Better add, actually, that is reportedly Anderson saying that. That's not the official word.
So you've no quotes then, Steve, is that it?
I've got some quotes, but they're not...
Tabloid.
Not from a reliable source, but... Let's hope he did come out and say that anyway.
United insider, Steve, was that it?
Something like that, yeah.
Right, okay.
Friend of Anderson.
What about Owen Hargreaves, though? The nightmare seems to go on, doesn't it? He's now been left out of Ferguson's latest Champions League squad, so rest of the season's looking pretty bleak for him, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like the never-ending story. I mean, he's... injury. First he was going to be back at the start of the season, then I think it was November, then it got pushed back to the new year, and I don't even know if he's got a date now. I mean, I think, like Dan said a few weeks ago, like, will he be the same player when he comes back? Because he was a fantastic player, and he's had that's pretty much 2 years out of the game. I think Ferguson did say that he can play, like, he doesn't need to register him for the league, so if he's going to play him, he can play him in league games, whereas he needs these 25 players in the Champions League, and he doesn't know when Hargreaves is going to be back. So,
Why don't they just put him? Why don't they just put him on the bench? You know, even if he's not going to come on, get him involved, and then he might say to himself, "Oh, I fancy playing now."
He's been training with the first team. He's been training with the reserves, so he's still training. But
apparently, he's fit. You know, he's fit and he's ready to go. But he's like we said a few times, it's his mental side of it that he doesn't want to risk yet, which is understandable. 2 years out of the game, but you know, there's a time when you've got to start doing it.
Could you imagine if he comes on and then, I don't know, it comes on against Everton and Fellaini comes in with a crazy challenge, knee high?
Like, well, no, that's where your management issues come into play. You know, if you've got a game against, I don't know, someone at Old Trafford who we're thumping, you know, 3-0 with 10 minutes left, just bring him on for 10 minutes.
Yeah, but what if they're playing against somebody and the opposition player gets frustrated and just like, right, I'm having this guy, I'm going through him.
But that could happen in any game, though, Dolph.
Exactly. So, I mean, like, you've got to think, like, I would make sure first, I would make sure he's ready completely 100%.
You don't,
like,
we won't know. No one will know. Ferguson himself won't know. Hargreaves won't even know himself unless he's ready, unless he starts playing. You know, it's a reserve team game. I mean, he could do the same thing there. Somebody could go out to injure him, but I doubt it'd happen. You know, I can't see that sort of. You know, it's a bit cynical. But
I just think you're playing with a guy's career and a guy's livelihood. I mean, I think because of the length of time he's been out and he's had problems before he came to us as well, then I would rather make sure it was properly ready, not just maybe 90% or whatever, 100%. Ready to go before we start throwing.
I know. What I'm saying is, how do we know that though? Because obviously, like, if he waits until the beginning of next season, all the pre-season friendlies and whatnot, who's to say that not someone's going to do that in one of those games? You know, sometimes you just got to jump in and see if you can, you know, if you can swim. I just think that he's a good player, and we've missed him a little bit. But I mean, we can't judge Owen Hargreaves whether he's ready to play or not. It's only him who can do it, and he just needs to. No, do it. Steve, what do you think? Because, I mean, obviously you're listening to us two now, just babble on about it, but, I mean, what's your opinions on Hargreaves?
It's a difficult one, isn't it? It really is. I think I'm with Dov, to be honest. I don't want him to be rushed back, sort of thing. And if he picks up another long-term injury, that's it, isn't it, for Hargreaves? Completely finished yeah. career. So next season, what is he, 28 at the minute, is he? Next season he'll be obviously 29, so give him pre-season to try and get fully fit, give him a couple of pre-season games, and then hopefully he'll be ready for the start of next season. I think Ferguson's done the right thing. We're playing well without him. We've got Fletcher in there to battle on like he is. Carrick's playing well. Scholes is playing well. Anderson reportedly looks like he's ready to pull his socks up. So I think it's a good decision. Leave him out and keep building up his fitness. Right, well, let's move on to Cabbage and Player of the Week now then, guys. We'll start with Cabbage. Ultimately, difficult decision considering we hammered Portsmouth. So, Dan, you got anyone in mind?
The only one who played poorly was Gary Neville, I think. I don't know. I think it's times that we say every week. You know, fair enough for Ferguson to giving him a game against someone who he knows we're going to beat, but I think he's not up to it anymore, which is sad to say. But
wasn't that bad though, was he?
No, he wasn't. I said that he's the only player who played average. I didn't say he was shocking, but I just thought he wasn't the. He's not. It's hard to compare because like Gary Neville, obviously, we used to see him run up and down the right wing, you know, putting crosses in, but he's never going to do that anymore. But I just thought that he was poor. Sorry.
Gary Neville will come after you and your girlfriend.
I know, but yeah.
Tough. Cabbage.
Again, very, very difficult. I've got to give it to Darren Gibson, actually. I just thought he wasn't really anywhere near Fletcher's level of performance when he came on. Wasn't around a wee bit, but nothing too good.
To be fair, it's hard to come into a game where you're like, I don't know, was it 4-0 up?
Yeah, Dan, I didn't say it was bad. I'm just saying, like, there's nobody else to pick. And he's like, out of all the players, I just thought he was, for me, the worst.
Go on, Steve, enlighten us. Who's your cabbage?
I'm going to give it to Mammy Diouf for blazing over that chance, which he should have really finished, because what we discussed in reserves review the other week, I mean, he scored a fantastic hat-trick, and a lot of the chances were a lot harder than the one he had on Saturday. So,
I think he just snatched it a little bit. I think he thought he scored before he had done. But he'll learn from that. It's not a problem. He looked gutted when he missed it, to be honest with you. Michael Owen looked even more gutted, because he put a great ball through to him as well. But
okay. And Player of the Week, Dolph, start with you.
I'm giving it to, I think it was Dan's player last week, Michael Carrick. It was absolutely amazing. Got back well, broke up the play, and then it was just creating everything, and kind of got a goal as well. So it was, you could say, unplayable. So I thought he was definitely the best player on the park for me. So he's my player of the week.
Dan?
Although Carrick was very good again, I'm going to go with Mr. Berbatov. I know he listens to this podcast. And I think me giving him player of the week every week, I think it'll up his performances. You know, Ferguson doesn't need to do his team talk when I'm here. So, you know, go on, Dimitar.
Great stuff. I am going to give it to Darren Fletcher. He created the first goal for Rooney at what was a crucial time. Because, I mean, Portsmouth had that chance very early on, didn't they? That was cleared off the line. Considering, what was it, 40 minutes in before we got the goal. If we'd gone in 0-0 at half time, it might have been a bit of sort of a shaky second half. So, Fletcher's cross for Rooney's goal, and just he was just sort of the engine room in the middle, and really the catalyst behind our decent performance. So yeah, Fletcher for me.
You're listening to the RedCafe.net podcast.
Well, it's time for the CAF countdown, and tonight we're joined by RedCafe.net member Green Demon on tonight's CAF countdown. Why Green Demon?
Well, because it fits in both buttons in the name, which has got a green in it, and obviously fits with Red Devil.
That's
and
nice.
One of my aunts was called me Demon when I was a kid.
No, that's not. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? I'm not sure. And then, anyway, after another emphatic win at the weekend, do you think United are going to go on and win the league this year?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's going to be very, very close. And maybe we might get more idea the last week of the season. But I really hope we win, because that would be fantastic to set history. You know, to become the first team to win it for the fourth time in England. But I really don't know. Yeah, but I'm not an optimist by nature.
And what's your favourite United moment?
Well, most of the one that goes back to me, the very first match I ever saw, which goes back to when I was only a kid, and it was George Best playing an absolute blinder. We beat Huddersfield Town, and you know, he'd just come back from a suspension, and he was absolutely the man of the match. He didn't score, but he set up the first goal. Fantastic game.
Right, well, back to the quiz. Fergal leads the way with 8. Eric, who got 7, closely behind. So, Green Demon, are you confident you can top the table tonight?
I'm not confident at all.
All right, well, good luck anyway. You've got minute to answer as many questions as you can, and the clock starts now. Which starting position did Ryan Giggs occupy in the 1999 Champions League final?
left midfield.
Who was United's top goal scorer during the 93-94 Premier League winning season?
Cantona.
In what 1970s year did George Best leave Manchester United?
1972.
Which former Red held the nickname of Little Witch?
Pass.
In what year was Rio Ferdinand born?
Nineteen eighty-one.
What was the name of the club which would later change its name to Manchester United?
Newton Heath.
For what reason was former manager Tommy Docherty famously sacked back in
1976? Because he had an affair with his wife.
Who was United's first main shirt sponsor?
Oh, that'd be definitely fun. Yeah, Sharp.
You got time to sit. You go with Sharp, yeah?
Yep.
Right, okay. My counting, you got 4 out of 8. So
oh, well. I'll give it a try.
It's respectable. No, it's not a problem. Just run through them now. Giggs played on the right wing in the final, because Blomqvist played on the left, didn't he? Okay. You got the Cantona one correct. George Best left in 1974.
Oh,
the Little Witch, Sebastian Veron. And Ferdinand was born in 1978, when the other ones you got right. So I think that's a decent score. I thought there were some tough questions in there, actually, to be honest with you. But it is all random.
Well, that's right. Thank you very much. I enjoyed that.
No worries.
And thanks so much for the podcast. I listen to it every week. It's good fun.
Oh, well, thanks for that. Cheers.
Cheers then. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Well, it's Legends time now, the redcafe.net podcast. Dov, who have you got for us this week?
This week, Steve, I went a wee bit old school, and I'm going for David George Hird, who was a striker, a forward for us. He was born on the 15th of April, 1934, in Hamilton in Scotland. A great country, it is indeed. He was brought up in Mossside in Manchester. Signed for his first club, Stockport County, as an amateur when he was 15 years old. He made his Football League debut in 1951 for Stockport and played in the same team as his father, Alec, who was 39 years old at the time. So you don't hear that very often. His performances for Stockport were very good. He played 15 games for them before Arsenal took him to London, and they paid £10,000 for him in August 1954. And it's over his time in Arsenal, he managed to get 180 games and 107 goals, which was fantastic feat, a fantastic record. Although Arsenal at the time, they weren't really the Arsenal that we know today, or the Arsenal that won the double. And really, they weren't really challenging for any honours, and obviously he grew frustrated. Basically, he wanted to leave. So, in stepped Sir Matt Busby and Manchester United and paid £35,000 for him in July 1961. When he signed for United, he sort of created a good partnership with Dennis Law, who was a new signing at the time as well. He got his first 2 goals and a 6-1 win at Blackburn Rovers, and that was in his third league game as well. And his father played for Manchester City. Well, surpassed his goal scoring tally. Overall for United, he scored 145 goals in 265 games, which is a phenomenal goal scoring record indeed. During his time with United, he was known for basically his shooting. His shooting was fantastic. It was always accurate. He was a strong player, really, really hard to knock off the ball, and was really adept at leading the front line as well. He scored twice in the 1963 FA Cup final victory against Leicester, and won the league championship in 1965 and 67. He scored on his debut in FA Cup. His scoring record was amazing, like I said, and it's incredible. A guy just scored that many goals for us, and obviously in an era where you could get away with maybe doing a Kyriakos or a Fellaini tackle on a player and not get sent off. although he did suffer a broken leg in a game against Leicester in the 1967 Championship season, and basically that really saw the end of his best playing days. He then moved to Stoke in 1968, played 44 games for them, got 11 goals, and was only there for a couple of years, then moved on to Waterford United as well, so he finished up his playing career there. For Scotland, incidentally, he only managed to get 5 caps. He scored 3 goals on those 5 caps, but it's really it's quite surprising. He got the caps when he was playing at Arsenal. So during his days at United, he wasn't in the Scotland squad, which is very, very surprising to me. I imagine the partnership he could have struck up with Dennis Law, which he did for a club, he could have done it for country as well. He also went on to manage Lincoln City for a brief spell in 1971-72. But one thing that really, really sort of sums up in kind of a way, but shows you the type of player he was. In 1967, the speed of his shots was calculated, and the resulting speed for one of his shots was 72.5 miles an hour, which, that's faster than you're allowed to drive on a motorway in the United Kingdom. That's how fast this ball was travelling. So, would you like to be a goalkeeper when you've got a ball travelling that fast coming at you? I don't think so. But it was a great player, a good professional, and an excellent striker for us, and that's why I picked him as this week's legend.
And you mentioned that, Dolph. I mean, were the balls not heavier back then as well? I know we're not talking sort of 100 years ago. Surely they were heavier than what they are today.
Well, so heavier balls, heavier boots, things like that. I mean, I can remember that David Trezeguet hit a shot and it was clocked. It was at 90-something kilometres an hour when he played against us, played for Monaco against us. I mean, I thought that was fast, but 72 miles an hour, that's stupid fast. I can also remember being at Old Trafford and they've got a thing, a little activity in the tour, which is you can measure the speed of one of your shots. And I think, if I can remember correctly, I think Wayne Rooney was the top, and I think he can hit it something like 85 miles an hour. I tried and got 55. But I mean, obviously I'm doing it with a new ball and lightweight shoes and stuff like that. But I mean, back in the day, like you've got to really like commend the strength of a guy who can hit a ball that hard.
You're listening to the redcafe.net podcast. You can email us at podcast@redcafe.net. Or alternatively, post your opinion on the redcafe.net forums.
So everybody, it's preview time on the redcafe.net podcast. And, well, I'm delighted to welcome Luke Marson back on the redcafe.net podcast. He's a Villa fan and he's from thevillablog.co.uk. Luke, it is a pleasure to have you back on the show.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
You'll be a happy man, obviously. We're playing Villa on Wednesday, and well, last time we played you, you managed to run out winners, although you didn't predict that. You predicted maybe a 2 or 3-1 victory to United. So what are your thoughts on the midweek game, and what do you think is going to happen?
Form for both teams is quite different last time around. You know, I was pretty confident that we would score, which we did. I did actually think your guys were going to get a goal and maybe a bit unlucky not to score. But a few teams have been unlucky not to score against us this season. We've been pretty tight in defence. I'm not entirely convinced we're going to be able to get the same result against you this time. I think United were certainly a bit off colour around the period we played them last time, and they seem to have started to pick up and form a bit. Rooney seems to be really on fire now, although we're still looking solid at the back. So I think it's a tougher one to call. We're not scoring many goals at the moment, just the one in the last five or six games. So I think you'll probably win it this time. But I do have a niggling feeling that it could possibly end all square.
Not as sort of pessimistic as you were last time. You were going for the United win straight away, but you're maybe a little bit more hope this time.
Yeah, well, you know, we haven't beaten you at your place for 26 years, was it?
It was a long time before I was born, I think.
It wasn't much after I was born. I certainly don't remember it. I just didn't think we were going to get anything at your place. I mean, at home, I'm much more confident against you. But, you know, saying that, we've not been doing as well recently.
Yeah, well, like, just sort of talking about a few of your players, look, James Milner has been a bit of a revelation this season. That he's moved into the centre of midfield, I believe. I mean, what are your thoughts on him sort of moving position into a more central role?
I think it's an ideal move for him. I think I'd said on the blog at the start of the season, and even hinted last season, that I thought he was a bit wasted on the wing because he looks like he's got good all-round vision. And that was a bit wasted on the wing. And I did want to see him come in midfield because he's got such an engine on him. He can be box to box, and he does see more Steven Gerrard than say Ashley Young or Downing. So I'm pretty pleased he came midfield. He's not really let me down. He's still adjusting, you know. He's not perfect yet, but he certainly looks like he's heading towards being the real deal as a central midfielder in the next couple of years.
And talking about a couple of other players, more attacking threats. Ashley Young and Stuart Downing. I mean, like, Stuart Downing took a little bit to, well, a lot of time to sort of get his first start because of injury. How has he been performing since he sort of got back into the, also got back fit and back in the side?
Well above expectation. I know quite a few Villa fans weren't particularly happy about the signing. We didn't think much of him. Didn't think he could cross. He said he looks like he's put a lot of weight, but you know, since the first game, he's been really good. He's been quick, clever, getting good crosses in, getting involved. Looks like a typical Aston Villa player, and it was quite out of the blue, I have to say. Didn't expect him to be playing quite as well as he is.
What about Ashley Young? I mean, he's not like really at the heights of last season, as far as I'm aware. I mean, do you think he, obviously he's a dangerous player, do you think he'll maybe be the key to your performance against us, or do you think he's sort of more sort of team orientated than what he's were last season?
Well, on his current form, you never can tell what you're going to get from Ashley Young. He has flashes of brilliance where he looks like a world-class winger, and then is back to just an average Premier League winger. He peaked at the point actually when Martin O'Neill called him a genius, and I think things went to his head. He got a very expensive new contract, and he's just not lived up to it since then. Villa fans have been calling for him to be dropped for a while because they think he just needs to be dropped, start working hard in training, start practicing things, you know, that are weakening his game, and then he might improve. But until the game comes, I really don't know what sort of form or what sort of mood he's going to be in, whether he's going to terrorise your fullback or whether he's just going to be, you know, putting in the odd good cross here and there. I just really don't know.
Talking about your sort of club as a whole, I mean, you are sitting seventh in the league at the minute, obviously behind City, Tottenham, Liverpool. Do you harbour real Champions League aspirations to get that fourth spot, or are you kind of more settling for a European League, a Europa League spot, sorry?
I mean, the form guide is certainly the odds on favourite, but actually, I wrote a post for the blog on Sunday. I looked at the fixtures for the season, and after we've got you guys, I mean, we're looking at Burnley and Stoke, Burnley and Sutton at home, Stoke away, Wigan away, Wolves at home. And City, Paul and Tottenham have got some tough games coming up. They will, you know, example, Spurs have got some quite easy games, but they have to play Man City. Man City have got to play Liverpool and Chelsea as well. And Liverpool, obviously, they've got Arsenal in the week, and they've got Man United in 3 or 4 weeks' time. As I mentioned, they play City. So, you know, depends how those games go. We've got some of the teams that we should hopefully pick up results against. So we, while they're sort of inviting each other, sneak above them.
Yeah, it will definitely be very interesting, very, very close indeed. And look, you predicted last day in 2-3-1 at United. What would be your score prediction this time?
I do think it's going to be a tough one. I think, given the form you're on, I think I'm going to go the same. I think it's going to be probably 2-1. I think it's going to be quite a close game. It may be a score draw. But I think I'm edging towards you guys winning it this time. I know I was wrong last time, and I'd like to be wrong again this time. But the form's completely different this time around, so I think United will probably get the points.
Yeah, I think it will be a tough game. But look, we've run out of time, as always. Hopefully we'll have you back on in a couple of weeks' time before the Carling Cup final, if you're up for that. This time it'll be a game for a trophy.
Yeah, well, I'd like to come back and have a chat about that.
Excellent stuff. We shall definitely get you on for that. Thanks very much for covering on the Red Cafe.net podcast, Luke.
It'll be a pleasure.
Thanks very much.
Well, that was the views of our opposition fan. But what do we think? Aston Villa away on Wednesday. Dan, it goes without saying, really, that it's going to be a difficult game, doesn't it? But, I mean, they beat us at Old Trafford earlier in the season, didn't they? But the lads should be spurred on by that, shouldn't they, to go out and get a bit of revenge. And we really are on top form at the moment, so hopefully we can go there and get all 3 points.
Yeah, they're not playing that well, are they, Villa? I don't think at the moment. I think we should turn up there, essentially try and dominate. I mean, I'd love to see us go 4-4-2, whether Ferguson will do or not. We have this debate every week what formation he's going to play. But I think if we go there and attack from the outset, I think that we can get a positive result. They've got some good players. Obviously, Agbonlahor up front. I mean, he's very pacey, isn't he? Very strong. Depends whether they go with Heskey or John Carew.
I think Heskey came off injured at the weekend as well.
Did he? Right, okay.
Yeah,
well,
came off for cover.
I think they've got a good strike force, but I mean, the way that Evans has been playing, I think that our midfield strength and our strikers should be able to do the job, really. And obviously Van der Sar's back as well in goal still. So I think that he deserves a lot of credit over the past few weeks, and I think that we might not necessarily keep a clean sheet, but I think we'll get the win.
I think the main issue that I've got with Villa is the pace they've got up front, which I think will cause us problems. I mean, Wes Brown had a reasonable game at the weekend, but I think if you're going to put up, like, if Ashley Young or Agbonlahor is going to run at him, I think he's going to struggle.
I think the key for it is to stop Ashley Young getting the ball at the first point, really. And that'll be a lot down to the strikers, Rooney and whoever, you know, to pressurise the centre-halves and the full-backs. Don't let them get that out.
Villa have proved this season, though, Dan, that there's so much more to their game than just Ashley Young. I mean, you ask any Villa fan, he's probably likely to say that Young hasn't really been their best player this term. I mean, James Milner's been the standout player, isn't he? And
yeah.
So you've got Agbonlahor pose as a threat, I should say. So I don't think it's all about Ashley Young, and I think Dov's right. I mean, it's going to be their pace is going to be a worry, and that may even force Ferguson to go with the 4-5-1 just to sort of have that extra man in the middle who sort of dominate the midfield. Like you said, Dan, we debate it every week and we usually get it wrong, so we'll see what he does.
I think, like saying that, like, because we got beat off them before, I think he'll go and pack that midfield out and really look to make sure we don't lose the midfield battle, and then try and hit them on the counter-attack. Because I think, like, maybe they're probably weakest at full-back as well. So it's an area we could exploit, especially with Nani on form. He could really sort of get into sort of Luke Young, I think, they've got a defence. And to be fair, Richard Dunn, but he's played for them. He's solid, but I wouldn't say he's a fantastic central defender.
Well, before we end this week's podcast, we'll look ahead to Milan away, the first leg of the Champions League first knockout stage. And well, because Dov is going to be away next week on his Hollybobs, we're not going to be able to preview the game before we take them on Tuesday. So we'll be doing a review show after the game in Milan. So, Dov, it's going to be a difficult game. Obviously, going out to Milan, I assume Ferguson's going to want to keep it nice and tight, 4-5-1. But saying that, Milan, they haven't been playing very well, have they, of late? They haven't won in four after going through a really, really decent run. They only lost one in, what was it, about 15, 20 games. So, No, they're rocking a bit at the moment. And with Rooney in the form he is at the moment, we should be going there and causing them a few problems, shouldn't we?
You say that, but since they got beaten in the derby, they really have, they have looked shaky. They did hit the post a couple of times at the weekend in the 0-0 draw against Bologna. You could say they should have won that game. But before then, before the Milan derby, they were on fire. Like, they were absolutely fantastic. If you asked me a month ago who I thought would win that game between United and Milan, I would have said Milan 100%. But the way that the form has reversed as such, it's going to make it very, very interesting. For me, though, I think Nesta is going to be back for Milan. He's been out for the last few weeks. He's key for them. He's been immense this season at the back. And him and Thiago Silva formed a great centre defensive partnership. And both of them are good enough to shackle Rooney, even in the form that he's in. For me, Nesta's probably, on his day, the best defender in the world. I know Dan's going to jump in and disagree with me completely when
I can't disagree. I don't watch enough of him to judge whether he's the best in the world. I just think that he's obviously a very good player. He wouldn't have been at the top for so long if he wasn't. But I think we can get in and about him, you know, especially with Rooney. All the pace that he's got and trickery that he possesses. I think we can get in and around their centre-halves, move them about a bit, and then hopefully one of our midfield, if we do go, you know, 4-5-1, one of them can break loose and get into the box. I think that'd be the perfect tactic, really, for away in the San Siro. And I think that as long as we don't get, you know, pummeled away from home, I think we've got every chance of going through. You know, if you lose, even if you lose 2-1, it's not necessarily a bad result, you know, because of your away goal. You know, as long as we keep it tight, like Steve said, keep it nice and compact in the middle, I think that we can try and exploit their weaknesses at full-back, like you brought up before, Dov.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably... That's where we'll have United will have the best chance, because full-back Milan, at the minute they're playing Antonini, a left-back who's not the best. He's a good player, an average type of player. And at right-back they're playing Ati, who's not a right-back. He's more of a right-winger. So, and they've got Mancini, who's came in as well. He can play right-back, but they're going to be playing him more as an attacking threat. So, I mean, that's where their biggest weakness lies, would be at full-back. And obviously the way they play as well, they play more... It's supposed to be... sort of 4-2-1-3, and then you've got your two wingers, Ronaldinho. Like, basically the way Barcelona used to play when Ronaldinho was there. But the way they play really is more a 5-5, where they just have five defenders and five attackers. It's ridiculous. They played a game against Calgary earlier on in the season. It was 4-3, and it was more like, well, if you score, we'll score, and we'll score more than you. That's basically the way that they play. And I think if United can keep it tight, then they'll go through. But you've got Ronaldinho, Pato, who is injured at the minute. He might be back in time, might not. He's a bit touch and go. But Borrello's on form as well. And then you've got Beckham making his return, which I think will be fantastic.
Yeah, what do you think about that, Dan? Beckham, do you think he'll start? And he's come out, hasn't he, and said that he won't celebrate because he's got such a great respect for the club and the fans as well. So,
well, if he's got that much respect, he won't score against us. And then hopefully we'll go through. No, I mean, I like Beckham. I've always liked him. I thought at the time it was a mistake to let him go, but it's proved out that Ferguson, you know, he might have been right. Got a decent money for him as well, saved on his wages. So, I mean, I suppose there's arguments to say he should have stayed, and there's arguments to say that Ferguson did the right thing, but still a good player. Could probably come in and do a job for us right now, actually. I just hope that he doesn't score, really. I mean, in a weird sort of way, I wouldn't mind him scoring, just as long as it wasn't an important goal that knocked us out.
I honestly think he would cry if that happened.
Do you think? I don't know.
I honestly think he'd get choked up, definitely.
I'd love to see him go in front of Ferguson and do what Tevez did with the old cup in his hands around his ears.
I think there'd be like boots flying at him then, I think. He wouldn't hold back.
Or just sticks a finger up to Gary Neville, something like that. I'd love it. But he's never going to do that. Yeah, like you say, he's too nice a bloke, isn't he?
So, Steve, do you think we can get a result on the first leg?
I think we can, yeah. Like you say, I watched them against Inter, and I don't think there's that much to be worried about, to be honest. When Ronaldinho has a good game, it seems like Milan have a good game, and when he doesn't, they don't seem to perform very well. And you'll probably correct me there and say that, of course, they don't rely on him at all. But like you say, Nesta coming back is a big plus point for them. I think Pato, if he does play, that'll cause a threat to our central defensive partnership, whatever it may be. But yeah, I'm quietly confident that we can even snatch a win, to be honest. It'll be an intense atmosphere, but we're used to that. We've played in those sort of big games in the past. We're used to it. We know what to do. We did really well against Inter the last time we went to the San Siro, so I don't see why we can't pull off a similar result and go out and even get the win. So
the way that I think Ferguson will start with five in midfield, because that's kind of what Inter done when they played them in the derby. So they really dominated midfield, and that basically they gave Milan nothing to work from and sort of stifled any sort of attacking threat they had because they couldn't get the ball. And I think that's what United will try and do as well. So,
and one worry is that watching Inter, I mean, they had Pandev breaking through, Schneider until he got sent off was another one that could break through. We don't really have that sort of creative attacking midfielder, sort of centre forward type player. Rooney will obviously be up there on his own. Although Carrick and Fletcher and Scholes, if that is the three he goes with, they have proved they can get forward and score goals like they did against Arsenal and City as well. So, yeah, let's hope we can go there and get a result anyway. And what do you both think about a prediction then, guys? Dov, going for a draw?
It's difficult. All my family are from Milan, so I've got people pulling me in both directions. But honestly, I think Milan will win 2-1 at the San Siro, and then United will probably take it in the second leg.
Dan?
Oh, I would actually agree with that, Dov. I think that Milan will probably will play well in the San Siro, but like Steve said before, you know, we went there last year and did really well against Inter Milan. So the fear of going to the San Siro has been eradicated, you know, because we already went there last year and did well. So I'm going to go with a 1-1 draw. Steve?
Like I said, I'm going to say we're going to snatch it. I think it will be really tight, and I'm going to go for a 1-0. That is just about it for episode 27 of the RedCafe.net podcast. Remember, send your emails to podcast@redcafe.net and join us again next week.